Hi.
Hi.
I'm Evan.
I'm Addie.
And you are listening to the Speaking English Podcast. It's the place to be for anyone who wants to watch more movies or read more books, but doesn't know where to start. We're back in action after a long break with episode 187 and book club 28.
Yay.
Yeah. Yay. So joining us for the book club is Aubrey. Welcome.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys?
Good.
Well, I'm also doing well.
Okay.
But you picked our book for today. It is
Stoner
by John Williams. Before we get any further, I have a big announcement to make, and it's that this podcast is now 4 years old today.
Wow.
Yay.
It's really crazy that it is like 4 years to the day.
Yeah.
Like exactly 4 years ago is when we made the first episode. That's wild.
So I guess when this comes out, it'll be a day after, but we're recording on the fourth birthday of the podcast.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That is really crazy.
What a wild 4 years.
Yeah, so much has happened.
We both graduated from college.
True.
You got back into it.
That is true.
I'm trying to get back into it.
And you will succeed.
We'll see. But yeah, I'll have some things to say about that, but I want to hear about your weeks first.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we last recorded. My spring break was really great. I went to Arizona and I saw Nicki Minaj.
Nice.
I wanted to talk about that, but that feels like it was so long ago now. But I got to see the Pink Friday 2 tour and I had the time of my freaking life. She is such a funny performer. Like she really, it was unlike any concert that I've ever seen. Because first of all, I haven't been to like all that many like stadium shows in general. But this was just not like any stadium show that I've ever seen before because she's so silly. She really like gets up on stage and it's like just not a care in the world. She does not stay on the stage for like most of the time. She's just really in and out. In the middle of her set, she left. She just fully exited the stage. Tyga came on instead. And like no one had any idea that Tyga was going to be there at all. And he just did a set of like four songs. It was so funny because they have so many songs together and they didn't do any of them. He left in the middle of the set and then Nicki came back. It was so funny. It was great. I had so much fun. And then I went back to school and that's actually been like horrible and crazy. Not really horrible, but just like so painfully busy. I'm a TA for a couple of classes this semester and all in total combined, I have 80 students that I have to grade for. And it's just like genuinely way too much. And it's killing my spirit.
Oh no.
Ouchies. 80.
Yes, 80. And like the way that most of these classes that I'm TAing for are structured is like in units. So at the end of their unit, they turn in an exam, a huge discussion post, and a paper in like this paper series that they're working on. And then I have 2 weeks to grade all three of those assignments for 80 kids. And the past like 2 weeks now, it's just, that's all I do is grade. And I don't like it. So that's made me have a little bit of a career crisis because I'm like, maybe I could never teach. I don't know. I hate this. So that's where I'm at school-wise.
Incredible. My dad is always grading papers. He's a teacher.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't realize how much like time it takes in grading.
Oh,
like how much time is dedicated during the school year. Because people are like, oh, that's so great. Teachers have summers off. That must be awesome. Right. But there's very little time to do anything during the actual year. So you have.
I know. It is such a time-consuming process. Sucks. So yeah,
you have to remember to be nice too. Like you can't.
Yeah,
sometimes you read things and you're just, why did you do this? Why did you think this was right? But you have to back up. take a breath.
It makes me genuinely angry. Like, a lot of them try to bamboozle me. I can tell. Like, they write these really long-winded answers when they don't know what the answer is that then I have to read. And I'm like sifting through to find anything that I can give them credit for. And I'm like, you thought you could trick me by writing this long-ass answer, but you can't. And now you've just wasted a lot of my time. It makes me so, like, genuinely mad. But in the actual comments, the actual feedback I give them, I'm extremely nice, very polite, and very helpful. But I sit here, right here on my lap, and I'm like, these kids are so dumb! Like, out loud.
That reminds me of the one guy in the book that we read.
Which one guy?
I forget his name, but the guy.
Walker? Charles Walker?
He got up and just talked.
Bullshitted it?
Yes. Yeah. It is a lot like that.
Classic.
I have to be like, I see right through you.
I see through your lies.
Yeah.
What have you been up to recently, Aubrey?
Not too much. I just got done with spring break, and then I had to go back to school, which was a drag. But one of my projects for school is wrapping up. We deployed the website. It's live.
Right.
Please don't hack it. Please don't DDoS it. Please. It's just a little project. But there's still, it's like every day I find something that's broken and I go, gosh, darn it. And I have to fix it. What else? And then I'm going to Texas over the weekend. Fun times. Little family road trip with half of my family. Half family road trip, whatever it's called. Right. So that'll be exciting. And yeah, there's just so much to do. And I'm so tired, but life continues.
Yeah.
Life goes on. Where in Texas are you going to?
We're staying at a place that's a little outside of Dallas. I don't actually know. I'm not in charge of this trip, so I'm just kind of going with it.
I gotcha. Yeah. Sounds very cool and exciting. I recently went on a trip that I was not in charge of and was just along for the ride, and it turned out super fun. So I'm sure.
Yeah, I really want to hear all about your time with your family.
It was cool. Yeah, I just finished my spring break as well. Because we had Monday off also. I don't know if you guys had Monday off, but Easter Monday is a big deal. I think the way that my dad was talking about it, a lot of places in the States do Easter Monday off too. So.
Yeah.
Where?
Maybe in Texas. Maybe you'll encounter that when you go visit Texas.
Perhaps.
I guess it's a little out of season by now, though.
Yeah, a little late.
So yeah, spring break was great. My family visited me. They were here for like a week and a half almost. And we went all over the darn country. It was crazy. Yeah, and it was super fun. It was during Holy Week, which is, I think it's off for everybody the whole week. At least everyone at schools. No one has school for that whole week. But so I didn't have any work to do for a while. And we just traveled around. And I was not in charge of the planning. I said, go wherever you want to go and I'll tag along. And it turned out really great. We ended up going to like 8 different cities in 8 days. And it was like very hectic and lots going on, but at the same time, very, very fun.
That makes me so happy to hear.
Yeah. It was super nice for me also, because it kind of, I don't know, shook me out of some stagnation in a way. I feel like I gotta get going now. I was letting life drift me along, but now I gotta, I don't know, do better. Just swim with the current instead of just going with the flow, I guess is how I'd put it.
Totally.
But okay. I don't know. Something worked out well. And now I have less than 2 weeks, only about 10 days by now to finish up my application for grad school. So I've been working on that.
Is it a really long application?
Not too bad. I did all the other stuff. I just need to, the biggest thing is that I need to have a research proposal paper.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know too much I still don't really know too much about it, but they say it should be 3 to 4 pages long. And it's like, I don't know if I'm that, have my ideas that developed. So sure. That's kind of what I'm working on. I might just need to find some, I don't know, like how many sources they're expecting me to have by now or not, but we'll see. But I had to ask for a letter of rec at the last minute again, because I leave things to the last minute, but I think I was waiting for forever to like actually get started on the stuff I didn't want to do. And now that I have to, I'm getting it done or starting to. So
I do that all the time. And sometimes I feel bad about it, but the truth is that I like work really good under pressure. So
I need to have the deadline looming, but I tried to not do that this time because I have so much free time usually. And it didn't work out, but now I'm going to get on it and it'll hopefully work out.
It will.
And we'll see. And if that does work out, it's a quick turnaround and I'll be in Hungary in September.
How crazy.
So I'll go back to the States for like a month only.
Thanks.
Back by popular demand only. For 1 month only. I think that's all I have to talk about. I'm sure there's more stuff that'll come up because it's been like pretty jam-packed, because I think I did more stuff like last week than I did the full year up to that point. So maybe it'll come up later. But for now, I think it's time to talk about Mr. Stoner.
See what it sure is.
We did have a mailbag submission from a couple weeks ago that I just didn't find out, but it was just about, let's see, what did it say? It said, please bring the cat back for another guest appearance.
Wow, and I did.
There you have it. If you guys haven't heard, we have a mailbag that you can put your thoughts, questions, or suggestions, or really anything to communicate with us. And the link will be in the episode description. So come talk to us. And we will bring the cat back for another guest appearance. I don't know. I'm not in charge of that. But what are your thoughts?
I can definitely bring her back every episode.
There you have it.
Nearby.
There you have it.
Will she be saying anything on the episode, or is it just... you just have to trust us that she's there.
Yeah, she's pretty stoic.
You won't see it, but she'll go up and stare at the camera for 5 seconds and then leave.
Yeah.
Every episode. And you'll just have to trust us. So let's see. John Williams, Stoner, or Stoner by John Williams. Do you want to introduce us to this book, Aubrey?
Sure. Yeah. So
as it was your pick.
It was my pick. Yeah. It was recommended to me. John Williams, he's a guy from Texas. He was a guy from Texas. He's now dad. Sorry. Yeah. He was born in 1922 in Texas. Went into the Air Force for a while, ended up at the University of Denver in Denver, Colorado. Crazy.
Crazy.
And he wrote Stoner in the early 60s, and it was published in 1965 the first time. Didn't get a lot of critical acclaim when it was published, kind of went under the radar, and it wasn't until the early 2000s that it kind of had a second life, and it's now considered one of those great underground American novels. But yeah.
The great American novel? That's crazy.
New great American novel just dropped, came out of nowhere.
I love a good cult classic.
I had never heard of this book at all, or like of this dude or anything about it until you pitched it.
Yeah, also me.
I hadn't heard it either. And it was, like I said, it was recommended to me by someone. And then I started researching it, and it's like very well regarded, very well researched. People have written a lot about this novel. So kind of interesting.
Do you want to give a quick shout out to your friend that recommended you this book?
Not particularly.
Oh, okay.
I keep saying friend, like it was somebody I met at a party, and he was like, what do you do for fun? And I was like, oh, I read. And I was telling him what I read, and he went, there's this book you should read. I didn't really understand it, but you seem like the kind of girl who might. And then he recommended Stoner. And damn it, he was right.
That's crazy.
I thought we got roped into this. Sorry.
Like, what a weird, first of all, I hope I don't seem like the kind of person who would understand stoner. I don't, is that a compliment? I don't know. But anyways,
I think no, that's
there
a
will
compliment.
Be no shout outs.
I would always, I okay. love to be told that I would understand a book.
Yeah.
But yeah, so no shout outs. We'll just move past that.
All right. I like the anecdote though.
Mm-hmm. It stuck with me, and it was so out of place that I immediately went home and bought the prettiest copy I could find.
I think this is such an obscure book to recommend to somebody that you just met one time.
I know.
I respect it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like the gall of it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Anyways, moving on.
Yeah. What are our overall thoughts on this one? I can say in a word, I liked it.
I did too. I ended up really liking it, almost like reluctantly. I really didn't know I was going to, because I bought the ugliest cover possible. It's just like, and then I read the synopsis and I was like, God, this sounds bleak. Like, I do not really want to read the life of this dude that like doesn't amount to anything. And then it's like the opening paragraph is like, John Stoner's life, like, didn't really amount to anything. And, like, his colleagues just think of him as, like, a sad example of what they're going to become. Like, whoa. I don't like this. But I ended up getting extremely engaged, like, really quickly. And I really liked it. I think it was actually, it had so much really interesting stuff to say. So I'm glad that I read this ugly book.
Yeah, I feel positive about it. I'm glad this happened to me. This was recommended to me. It was good.
Everything happens for a reason.
So true.
Okay.
Now you have to track down that guy and be like, I hate to say it, but you were right.
I really liked this book, but also it threw me into it made me sad. I would be reading it on the train to school and like compare it to my current life and get sad.
Tears are coming out of your eyes as you're reading.
Not tears, not like maybe sad, just like an acute numbness of like what's going on with me.
It's
just
okay. Because men are allowed to cry.
No, that's true, but
you can admit this.
It wasn't a cry book. It was just a kind of like, I don't know.
I felt the same way, and I didn't cry at all, but it hurt pretty deeply sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like at my school, I don't really do too much and I kind of sit there a lot of the time. A lot of the teachers don't talk to me because I don't speak very good Spanish. And maybe they don't speak very good English, but a lot of the times I'm just kind of there. And when I was reading this book and just kind of seeing how the years pass Stoner by and the way that it jumps forward in time is kind of like, I don't know. I the thing that I like the most about this book is how it is really without any ornamentation. It's just, it feels in tune with like his parents and how they were raised and just kind of continued on from that. And like very objective and not much kind of, people think, do simple things and think mostly simple thoughts, but it combines together to create something that's very interesting, I thought.
I thought so too. It feels like there's not necessarily like smaller chunks of this book to like dissect. Like it's really about like the gist of this man's whole life. So I don't know like where to start the discussion. But Aubrey, do you know where to start?
I could try. I don't know. There was so much thought that went into thinking about work and doing work in different ways. And it was surprisingly readable for a novel about work because it goes really deep into these strange, kind of archaic English concepts that, you know, nobody but PhD students are probably thinking about, no offense to them, but it was it's like, it's so large and there's so much going on and there's so much work being done. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but yeah, the work. Anyways,
he put in the work. Life is all about doing work and doing it in a way.
I really like agree that it was so much about work. And it's kind of funny because that didn't really like amount to anything for him. That was definitely not the best or like most important part of his life. But I'm not really sure like if that's what the book is trying to tell you. Like I was really trying to understand what the intention was behind this. And I'm really not sure that I do. Like it's clear that the best part of Stoner's life is his affair and like being genuinely in love. And then both of them choose work over that. And it's not very clear to me if either of them like regret that. Like, I don't know. Like, do they feel like they made the right call or do they feel like there actually wasn't a choice to be made at all? Like that was just how that was going to shake out no matter what. I like don't really know truly.
I got an interesting overall theme out of this book and that made me actually feel okay at the end of it. But I think it really hammered home with the last chapter and how his life, how he's doing at the end of his life. Right. Basically that what my takeaway is that there's value in like living a full life regardless of how well or poorly it went, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
It's an accomplishment to get through a life regardless of how it goes.
Yeah. That's a great point. I like that.
And that felt very comforting to me because I think that's what you get throughout the book is kind of just like a lot of the little disappointments and the nice warm moments that you sometimes get within them. And so at the end of the day, it's less about looking back and seeing what was good and what wasn't, and more about looking back and just seeing what was, which I don't know. There was something that was like really oddly comforting about that at the end of the book.
He does seem like fairly content to die, like by the end. But I don't know.
It's interesting.
Something else that stood out to me about the last chapter was how genuinely miserable his wife and daughter were. And so something I kind of took from that, from Stoner being the one who's about to die, but being like fairly more content and at ease than either of them, is that he like experienced something more than either of them have ever experienced. And I really wonder if either of them will get to the end of their life and feel the same like type of contentment that Stoner feels, or if you're supposed to read like Stoner is fairly unique in that he was able to like feel pretty solid about the life that he lived, even though it was maybe had some serious regrets and was like kind of inconsequential because he felt things. He was in love because he was intelligent and introspective because he got to meet so many students. Like, I feel like there's a level of Stoner's like depth of mind and experience that allowed him to come to that end that maybe Grace and Edith will never have, even though they also lived like full lives. I don't know though.
That's an interesting thought.
And it's such a stark contrast from where we start with Stoner at the beginning of the book, because at the beginning, he's just this kind of simple farm boy who even acknowledges at some points that he's not yet capable of introspection. And then by the end, he's got this really deep and rich inner world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then despite that, he's still willing to acknowledge that his life was a failure, but it doesn't depress him. It was kind of like the experience of that, of creating that world and living in it was enough.
Yeah.
Which I love. Really. There's a repetition of like, what did you expect in this last line or the last end of the chapter that I really loved. It's like, what else did you expect? And if you think about it, you know, if he didn't go to the university, or if he went, came back from the university and did agriculture and lived on a farm and lived the same life that his parents did and their parents before them for however many generations, it's, you know, what would be different? And there, this book would be maybe 100 pages long with everything that fills up a life. And I think that I keep coming back and thinking about Dave Masters, his friend that died in the World War One, and his that chapter where they're talking about, where he's talking about the types of people that the university attracts that are kind of can't really get anywhere else in the world, can't really go anywhere else in the world. It's like a specific community and that sort of thing. And I think that that stands out. And I would like think about that at other points in the book with what's going on. And I think you see a lot of points where things could be different for Stoner. But he sticks to like specific principles and values that he holds, which is admirable, even though you see that the consequences lead him to maybe not be living as good of a life as he could be.
Yeah.
But I think there's something in just having those values that is also valuable. And I don't know, it was just really interesting to read. And I think that, I don't know, it was satisfying, like in an odd way. I don't know if your guys' book had this like introduction by, let's see.
Never in my life have I read the introduction of a book.
Oh, I always
read. John McGarren.
Yeah. Did you read that one?
Yeah, I read it.
There was something that he said in there about like, it's an escapist book, but you escape into work. Like it's the, I don't remember the exact turn of phrase because that is before I even read anything in the book, but it was like, it was something oddly satisfying about just like watching this man, reading about this man.
It really was oddly satisfying. I was really rooting for him despite a lot of things. I was very happy when he fell in love. That was awesome. And I also really liked reading about his like relationship with his daughter before it takes kind of a sad and bleak turn.
Yeah, that's hit me the hardest of just like when they're just chilling in the study doing their own thing.
Yeah.
That was so cute. Like, I don't know.
Did you guys have the letters that he wrote to an editor about the book? Oh, lucky me. But there is this one quote that I really liked that he's writing to Marie Rodel, who eventually becomes his literary agent and kind of pushes this book forward. But it's but the point of the novel will be that he is a kind of saint, or stated otherwise, it is a novel about a man who finds no meaning in the world or in himself, but who does find meaning and a kind of victory in the honest pursuit of his profession. And I said, that's so deep.
I love it.
But it's also, it's perfect. Like, it's literally just about Stoner pursuing a profession and kind of come what may as a result of that.
That's so funny that that's how like the author himself described this book, because that's just like not what I was about it. Who am I to argue with him? That's how he wrote it. But in my opinion, like, I guess I keep going back to this, but I'm like, his life did not start until he met the love of his life. Like, nothing about the pursuit of his career ended up being the thing that mattered at all. So I don't know.
I don't know if I'd agree with that. I think that
I think I would have to disagree.
The thing that breaks him out of
it's romantic.
You know, like he's has a set path for his life, right? And then he discovers this, he has that one class where things like open up for him and he's like, wow, there's more to life than hard manual labor and working on the farm. And I think as that opens up and he kind of realizes and sees more of that, he finds his like path and calling there and never turns back. And I think that's part of why he ends up breaking off his relationship with Catherine, is her name?
Yeah.
Catherine,
Because he's committed to this type of living, and his own maybe like personal life ups and downs play out across like that backdrop of consistency and consistent work within this profession, which I think is cool. Cause I think you see that with his daughter too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's kind of, he is caught up in his work, and when things are going good, they're good. But when the wife, you know, puts her foot down and starts trying to like change things and be, he can't resist that without deviating from his path. And so a lot of the stuff that happens, he's, it seems like he's kind of just watching go by because he doesn't feel the power to change it, because it's not within, I don't know, his toolbox or whatever. Cause he's kind of committed to, you know, this life and lifestyle, from like a specific moment early on. And it's like, it's admirable, but I don't really see that in my own life. And I don't see that in people now that
are
successful and good. So it's an interesting kind of dilemma.
I think the way that I read it was that a lot of what opens his mind at the very beginning of the book, like a lot of taking that class and then deciding to pursue literature, it reads like it almost just kind of falls into his lap. Like it just sort of happens by happenstance. Like it's not like an active choice to be like, and now I'm going to pursue literature. It's just like the first thing that ever makes him feel or think anything. And so he just kind of casually keeps on going. Like it's not really like, now I'm going to be a professor and that's the goal that I'm pursuing. Like it just like happens. It just unfolds in a very passive way. And then having his daughter too, like happens very passively. And obviously it's a big deal for him, but as the years go on, like it brings him joy, but it's not even something that like he fights for. Like he learns about like a capacity for care in himself, which is great. But as that relationship starts to get rocky, it was like disappointing to me over and over again, how little he fought to like stay in his daughter's, to stay as her companion. Like he just gave up immediately.
Yeah.
So fun. That it's really true. Pissed me off. And it wasn't until he met Catherine at like 40 that he was like, this, I don't like, things really opened up for him. His life totally turned around. The things that mattered and didn't matter to him, his career didn't matter to him at all. Like the hardships that he'd been facing because of that fucking horrible Lomax. I hate that.
Hollis.
Yeah. Suddenly didn't matter at all. Like, because I was being in love. And he even says during that time, he's like, you have to be in love to really know yourself. Mm. There are things about myself and about this life that I never would have figured out until then. And that's the first thing that he actually wants and will not give up. I mean, ultimately he does give it up, but it takes like a lot of persuasion, like a lot of self-control to give that up. And so that's why I read it as like, yeah, that's the main thing. That's the biggest thing that ever happened in his life. And then after it ends, he kind of just dies. There's a way, because that was it. Like the pursuit of love. I read this as like, that's the thing that he was really after, whether he knew it or not. And the thing that made the biggest difference.
I see. I like that. You bring up some ideas that I like, maybe I didn't quite like appreciate or recognize enough. But at the same time, though, it seems like the book follows kind of a pattern, and it's pretty late into the book where he meets her. And then there's this huge bright spot. But then I think after that thing that the affair ends, it kind of reverts back to form and kind of goes back to what we've been seeing before. And you said that he dies right after, but I feel like it's a solid amount of time just in the book. It's like very condensed.
Years. Yeah. I'm pretty sure they're having their affair while he's like 40, and then he dies at what, like 65? So yeah.
I think so, yeah.
It's 25 years go by of not a whole lot.
Yeah, it's true. And I think, I wonder how much, if he's aging acceleratedly because he doesn't have that love in his life or not. But I think the points that you bring up are good, and I don't know if I appreciated it maybe as much, but I think there's something also to like the consistency of this dedication, and not to say that he can't have more than one thing going on in his life.
Yeah, for sure.
Obviously, but I think like this base of like dedication to his job. Maybe I agree to a point that it's kind of a passive, like he kind of gets into it somewhat passively, but at the same time, it's that attitude towards work that he's probably adopted from his parents and however many generations that's applied to something that he actually cares about and is interested in and has a passion for. And I think that that first spark powers him through to live this kind of mundane working life with that at its heart. And, but yeah, I'm kind of still not quite sure where I fit in falling in love into that framework, because it does definitely change him and he's a different person after that. But I'm not sure how much it affects his like baseline mindset, maybe. So it was interesting.
I think I'm like just predisposed to read things this way. I don't know why. It's just the thing that I like. So it's the one that I look for because it resonates with me the most. But it really reminded me of that movie that I love, Wings of Desire, that we just watched. Because it feels like he really genuinely does gain a lot from his work. Like, I'm not trying to argue that. It does open his mind. It kind of transforms his life. He does find a lot of joy and like meaning through that, which is so great. And he develops that inner world that we were like talking about, ends up being kind of the most important thing, the thing that like made it his life worth living. And then he falls in love and everything that he's been struggling with at work doesn't really matter anymore. And the things that he does like about work get even better. And it just reminds me of that scene where the angel of Wings of Desire stops being an angel to be a human, to be in love. And he says, "I know now what no angel knows." And I think that John Stoner had that moment too. Like, I don't know why I called him John Stoner. Had that moment too. Like, he is like a fully formed person, an academic with a like compelling, interesting career path so far. But then he falls in love and he's like, "I know now what no academic knows."
I was going to say that. Perfect.
And that's the main thing.
What are your thoughts on this dynamic, Aubrey?
It definitely changes him. I feel like it broadens the life he's been living, because the relationship he and Edith have is very weird and stiff, and there's a lot of space in between them, both physically and emotionally, because, you know, she kicks him to like the corner of the house or whatever. But, and then it's such a different experience with Catherine. And throughout the novel, it's quite a frank portrayal of sexuality through everything. It's kind of surprising for something written by an older man in the 60s. Sorry, John Williams, but he would have been in his 40s, I guess, when he was writing this.
Sorry, John, you old hag.
No, I mean, it would have been the time of the, what is it called? The sexual revolution?
Yeah.
Watch movie completely. Okay, yeah. And yeah, I think there's quite a bit of nuance to it. And there's a surprising lack of shame or guilt, which often you see in books that try to tackle these topics.
Yeah, for him. I felt like genuinely so sad for Edith this whole book, like just nothing but sorrow for her. Like, it just, I think another maybe theme of this book is just about like the confines of society at this time, like the way that a lot of people would just get trapped and there wasn't a lot of option. And Edith is definitely one of those, like, she just kind of doesn't really have a choice. Like, what else is she supposed to do besides say yes to the person who proposed to her? It's just kind of the way it goes. She doesn't really have any other like prospects, and she's way too young and she doesn't want to be married. And it's from the way that it's described, she like doesn't even know what sex is. Like, nobody has ever told this to her. And then it just kind of happens to her. It's forced upon her and she's traumatized. And like the rest of her life is like the natural consequences of experiencing that type of like forced sexual trauma. Like, it just is genuinely so sad. And it, I think another big part of this book, or I don't know, something that it kind of made me think about a little bit, is how weird it must have been to live in this time when you just know very few people. Like, you kind of just live in the same town for a really long time, forever. You don't really meet people like outside of your neighborhood or outside of what you do. You don't even see glimpses into other people's lives who you'll never meet the way that we do right now, all the time, every day. Like, your perspective of what other people are doing in the world is so beyond narrow. Like, she had nobody to compare notes with ever. Like, nobody to ever be like, is this what life is like? Is this what this is all about? Like, her life was so painfully lonely, and her mind, her like perception is never broadened because of that. And that, it's just crazy to really know like how many people experienced exactly that type of life, like everywhere for so long.
I wonder if that's why this novel resonates with so many people, because one of the descriptions I read was that it's a truly human story, that it's very bleak, but it's truly human. So I can imagine that since we live in such a modern age, maybe we don't even understand the true nature of this story because we're so far divorced from that time.
Maybe in the modern age, we have no idea what it's like to truly be human.
No, I don't know if I would go. I don't know if I would go that far.
I was so I was just telling Adam about this book after I finished it, and we were talking about how even though things like seemed a little bit more simple back then in some ways, and maybe even a little bit easier to like make money and like buy a house and things like that, it feels like the human capacity for happiness and joy is like way higher right now than it ever was back then. Like, there's just way more ways to feel happy and have fun in life right now than there ever was back then. Like, the moments of happiness for Stoner are so far and few between, so memorable and simple, and things that we just like expect to have like all the time right now, you know? Like, I don't know. That's just really kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really love the idea of the getting the concept of like getting stuck in these societal roles, because I think that comes up a lot in this book. And there's like a passivity to it, that like, what are you going to do? What did you expect? You know, like,
yeah,
if you don't know that you're being trapped in these roles, you don't know that you should, like, you can't break it if you don't know that you're being trapped, I guess.
Yeah.
Which I think is not really addressed at, like, directly, but is like pervasive throughout the book.
Yeah. I think that's actually like a huge point that this is trying to make, is just like the dangers of lack of education and perspective. Like, so all of these characters just get themselves into something extremely serious before they understand what they're doing at all. And it's bad for them. It just really, really takes a toll.
Yeah, and it's really pointed out quite physically by the fact that Stoner works at the same university for 40 years, and he never rises above the rank of professor. And it's just, it's so on the nose, you kind of miss it when you're not thinking about it. But, I mean, to work for 40 years at the same job, it's a thing of the past. It's a thing of the past.
Yeah.
Because stupid Lomax didn't spread his wings.
Oh my God, that guy is insane. What is his problem?
Hold a grudge for that long is just crazy. Like, that kind of stood out to me about this too. I agree that it's like a very human novel, and it's like, yeah, a lot of this makes sense. But that guy made me be like, do people actually behave like that in this world? Like, I've never met somebody capable of that level of resentment over something that's like not that big of a deal. Like, I don't know any real life people like that. That's just crazy.
It was definitely
entertaining. Every hero needs his villain.
That's true.
Sorry.
It was so entertaining to read about those like office dramas and office politics and have no skin in the game, no risk, because it's not fun when you're in it. But when you're looking from the outside, it's quite fun.
That's true. I like, I really like Finch. We haven't really talked about him at all yet, but I think that he is such a great and interesting character. I love how he's obviously really rooting for Stoner and fighting for Stoner, but he also just has this like weird respect for people who can play this political game as well as like Lomax is playing it. And I thought that that was really fun to read. Like the thing about Finch is that I actually don't know what I was going to say. There's like a lot to think about in terms of Finch, even though his appearances in the book, like it's not that much. Mm-hmm. We don't really learn that much about him, but it's really interesting to me to see how well he played the game, how clever he is, and like how much that worked for him in a not very like in a way that didn't cost him hardly anything. Like I really like that he gets to the end of his life, or Stoner gets to the end of his life, and is like Finch hasn't aged. Like he looks the same. He's more fun than ever. He wears these eccentric, bright, colorful outfits. And he's just a jovial dude who's in love with his wife. Like, that's the secret, is that he like, succeeded in this realm of school more than Stoner ever did without the dedication and without, like, the strict morals and stubbornness that Stoner put into it. Like, he played the game really well. And then he ended up being this amused, youthful guy for a long time. And I think that there's something really serious there. I think that Mr. Williams tried to tell us something.
John was cooking with that one.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a good point that like it's kind of a foil. That's the word. To Stoner. And it's interesting, like that dynamic, because he's there the whole time. Of the people that are in Stoner's life towards the end, he is the one that's been around the longest.
I know.
I love the idea that, well, first of all, I think it's hilarious. It is like these three dudes, they would just get together every Friday. And then it's like, these are now your besties for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And then so like Dave Masters, the one who died, is always brought up, and he had all this insight into exactly what would happen to them or like who they are.
Yeah.
And then you don't see any kind of like, it's been a while since I read the beginning of this book because I took like put it on a break for a while when I was gone and whatever. But I think that in that scene towards the beginning when he's telling them all this stuff and reading them like a book, it kind of like points out the paths that they would follow. And he knew it the whole time. And so those words that he leaves behind and that those like ideas, I think, loom over each of their lives moving forward. And I think, you know, he read them like a book, and it turned out exactly how you would say. So
interesting. It's a good point.
What else do we have to talk about with this one?
I cannot imagine how bleak it must have been for the generation of people who saw World War I and World War II.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then Vietnam after that. Just like, how did we get out of that? How did we survive?
That's a great question.
Just the atrocities of World War I, and you're thinking to yourself, there's no way it can ever happen again. And then it happens again.
What are you gonna do? What did you expect?
Protest
love that.
War.
I don't know. Something about that.
What did you expect?
Well, that's what Stoner keeps saying at the end of his life. I think that's there's something that's really nice about that to me, because it's like there's no instruction manual to life. Like things happen. I think I keep going back to this idea of like, at the end of your life, it's less about what went well, what went poorly, just more that it all happened. Like, what did you expect? I don't know. Something about like that line repeated is very comforting, which I know I already said at the beginning of the episode, but those are my thoughts on this book.
Yeah, I think we've kind of covered what needed to be covered. We haven't talked that much about Grace, the daughter. That story wraps up, but man, that's just really sad. And I think that's just like a I don't know, maybe a cautionary tale to parents. Don't treat your kids like this.
Yeah, don't be a helicopter parent. Otherwise, your kid might turn into an alcoholic. You know, you never know.
It makes me, the line that maybe made me the most sad in this whole book is when he's about to die and she comes to visit and she's kind of talking about her life. And he's like, it makes me happy that at least she can drink.
That was so not
as a reprieve. I was like, whoa, that's the best you can hope for this girl who you love so much. That is crazy. Nothing else to say about that. Just really broke my heart.
Raised my eyebrows. Raised my eyebrows, broke my heart.
That's the whole book, really. Just eyebrows raised, heartbroken, a single tear coming out of your right eye.
On my cover of the book, he's reading some books.
I like yours better than mine. It's horrible. Like, in my head, when I was reading it, I pictured him as pretty hot, honestly. To get to have an affair with a young girl. I think he's way hotter than this guy on the cover.
Well, isn't it Lomax who's supposed to be the most hot, but then he has
but
a physical deformity?
Yeah, he's described as handsome but deformed.
Yeah, but not to handsome me.
Not to me. I feel like I pictured Stoner as J. Robert Oppenheimer, but like the guy, not Cillian Murphy as Oppenheimer.
That's so random.
He was a skinny guy. J. What does the J stand for?
Stoner is like a big dude, like big farmer dude. And it says one time that he's like sandy blonde hair. So I stuck with that.
Mm.
Yeah. And he's pretty cute in my head.
Nice. All right. What are our ratings for Stoner? And would we recommend?
I think I'm going to give it a 4. And I really would recommend. It's short. It's like honestly really easy to get through. Mm-hmm. And it just was really good. I don't know. It's really insightful to this period of time and ended up being like a weirdly hopeful story, even though it was also extremely bleak. It was nuanced. It's layered.
Yeah. It's got lots of layers, like onion.
Give it a read. I wouldn't say it's like a new all-time fave, but I did really enjoy it and I'm really glad I read it. What about you?
Yeah, I'll go with the same 4 out of 5. Would recommend. I don't know. Be prepared to be sad, you know? Just get ready.
Buckle up.
Yeah. I agree. Would recommend. I think it was like a very unique read. I don't know how many other books I've read that have made me feel the way that this one did. Which is a good thing. And agreed. Yeah, 4 out of 5. I'm glad that he got to write his book.
I'm glad he did too. And I would read 4 from him, honestly. He's got a lot of books.
I meant Stoner. Stoner got to write his book.
Oh, gotcha.
Oh.
But also John Williams. I'm glad that he got to write his book. Both of them, actually. I like it. Yeah, there you have it. So if you read this book, let us know your thoughts. You can put them in the mailbag and join the discussion. And as always, if you want to be on a book club episode, if you've read the book, we're only inviting you if you actually read the book.
Yeah, we're going to quiz you before you're able to.
You have to take a comprehension quiz.
Having not read the book, I'd be kind of down. That'd be so funny.
That would be pretty funny.
Maybe I'll try.
I wonder if somebody can fool us though, because I don't know if I would be bold enough to like
call them out.
Yeah,
I think maybe it would. I would do it if I had read the book like years and years ago, and I like vaguely remember it. Yeah. I'd be down. I would do that. It's my turn to pick the next one, right?
Yeah,
it is.
Because I already have my book picked out, but now I'm thinking it's going to be another sad one. So it's too late.
No, we can do sad back to back. Okay. I'll be sad.
I always pick the sad stuff in the pod, I'm noticing. But I'm confirming it because I already bought the book. So the next book club book is Dubliners by James Joyce. Have you guys read this one before?
No.
All right. If you had, I might have changed my mind. James Joyce is a name that I've heard a lot, and I wanted to read a book of his. I hear that Ulysses is crazy, but also it's crazy long, so I wasn't about to pick it for book club. This is a collection of short stories, which I wanted to bring back because we've had a good time with all the short story collections we've read. But apparently it's really sad. I didn't know how about this.
There's a lot of sad Irish media in this world that I have to delve into, but I didn't really think I knew before how sad the Irish can be. So I'm excited.
I think it's because they don't see the sun. Like, they don't get enough sunlight, and that can make you sad.
This will be three sad books in a row, because I felt that Kindred was pretty sad.
It was pretty sad.
Yeah. It's getting a little depressing.
Yeah.
And it's not too long. It's like a few short stories. There's like the last story, or one of the stories in this book is supposed to be like really good. The Dead, it's called. I read, they said that one, like, by itself is supposed to be one of the important short stories to read. So we'll see. Cool. I thought it could be cool, and it'll be a fairly short read.
Sounds good to me.
So if you guys are cool with that, that can be the next book club.
Yeah, no.
Ta-da. Cool. So for the next episode, I think we got to do March wrap up, right?
Yep.
As we're well into April already.
Yeah.
maybe we could try for a quick turnaround.
Okay.
Depends on, I got to finish up my application. So we'll see.
Yeah, let me know.
But yeah, we'll figure it out. I didn't watch too much last month.
Yeah, me neither. Actually, did we talk about Dune 2 in our last wrap up?
Huh.
Okay, oh my God, I forgot about Dune 2.
We can get into it.
How did you forget about Dune 2?
I saw it twice in IMAX.
Oh, it's so good.
I'm more than halfway through Dune the book since I watched Dune 2.
Oh, nice. I'm excited to hear what you think about that.
Yeah, so that'll probably be April wrap up. But that's what we got going on. It's been a long break and we're getting back into it, but I always love a good book club. Usually the book, I know our 2 month break, the last episode before that started was a book club. This one, we're coming back with a book club. So
true.
It all works out. One end of the book end or the other.
We're coming up on the year anniversary of our extended break.
Oh, yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, I started to remember the end of my last spring semester and how traumatic it all was.
Well, that was actually the shorter break. That was our first longer break. And then when I first moved to Spain, it was like even longer time off. And two big breaks last year.
Yeah, we did.
Ay, ay, ay. But we're still here putting out episodes.
True.
For the last 4 years.
That's really crazy. We are dedicated to our craft.
Just like a certain Billy S. I know. Cool. So that means all that is left to do for this time around and to send off Book Club 28 is to recommend an album. If you're new here, every week, every episode, we let you know about an album that we want you to listen to if you haven't heard. And here we are. And on the book club days, Aubrey gets to join in on the fun. So Woo. Do you want to go first this time, actually, Aubrey?
Sure.
I
am recommending Laugh Track by The National. That's my album.
I like that one.
All right. Is this the second National album you've recommended, or am I making that up?
Yes, I think I did the first two pages of Frankenstein a while back.
Nice. Yeah. Anything to say about it? Is good.
It's good. It's All a right. solid album. It's I think it's supposed to, it's like the sister album to the first two pages of Frankenstein. Like they did a double release. I'm pretty sure that's right. Might be wrong. But yeah, no, it's a good album. Good, solid album.
Give it a listen. Addie, what you got?
I'm going to have to recommend Cowboy Carter by Beyonce. Oh. If you haven't listened to it already, it's so good. I feel like probably most people have already listened to it because it's kind of sweeping the nation. But you haven't heard Cowboy Carter?
It's like a country album. I heard that Beyonce was releasing a country album.
Yeah, it is the country one.
It's not as country as I thought it would be when it was like announced to be a country album. It was definitely a Beyonce album before it's a country album, but it's very Western inspired. It's like heavily inspired by her own upbringing in Texas, her like kind of Southern roots, Southern artists that she admires, and just sort of like a Western state of mind. Like she has a role. It's just so good. She does, a cover of Blackbird by the Beatles on this album that is really, really beautiful. And Paul McCartney just like posted about how meaningful that was to him earlier today. So that was really cool. It kind of brought a tear to my eye. And it's just a really experimental, like really unique and fascinating album. She is kind of like an academic about music. Like she really, like this album is like a dissertation more than it is just an album, I guess. I don't want to say just an album because like every album is like, you know, special. More than an album. But okay. I like the thought and like the calculation behind the music that she makes is so evident and so unlike what a lot of artists are putting out today. Like she is really in a league of her own. I love Beyonce. This album's so good. And this is the second album in what will be a trilogy. And I'm so excited to hear what the final album is that like wraps it up will be. Oh my God. So exciting.
Nice. Sounds good. She's dedicated to her craft.
She's so dedicated to her craft.
Just like another certain professor.
Oh my God. She is also so dedicated to her marriage. Just like Stoner, like this is a theme that comes up in this album a lot because, you know, Jay-Z has very publicly cheated on her. We're still talking about that. How she's still with him regardless in this album. It's very interesting to me.
I don't know how you get a woman like that and then think to do anything else. I really don't get it.
Really, really wild.
Yeah. My album is a bit of a throwback. I'm sure I've recommended this before, but I've been listening to it a lot lately and it felt right to choose it for this week. It's Turn on the Bright Lights by Interpol, Interpol's debut album. It's so good. I love this album. From top to bottom, it's nothing but classics. It has such a specific state of mind. It's great for listening at nighttime. Of any season, really. I feel like it's one of those you can listen to it whenever.
Nice.
And one of my favorites. Love it, love it, love it.
Love it, love it.
And there you have it. That's what we got for this time around. Book Club 28 is in the bag. Let us know what you thought about Stoner by John Williams. If you want to join in, our next book for Book Club is going to be Dubliners by James Joyce. And we'll be back next time around for March wrap-up. We'll see you then. Thanks so much for listening. And do great things this week. We all believe in you.
We do.
We do.
Bye now.